like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. You just heard the debut of the Talking Animals theme, composed and sung by the exquisitely talented Rebecca Pulley Moore. On Rebecca and her fabulous music can be found at RebeccaPulley.com. That's RebeccaPulley.com. My guest today is Lauren Scheuer, who writes the popular blog Scratch and Peck and is the author of the new book Once Upon a Flock, Life with My Soulful Chickens. We'll speak with Lauren presently. Also later in the show, we'll have a brief chat with Scott Daly, executive director of Pet Pal Animal Shelter in St. Petersburg, which is holding its 11th annual Puppy Love fundraising dinner on May 10th. Additionally, later is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. We'll give away a copy of Lauren Scheuer's new book, Once Upon a Flock, Life with My Soulful Chickens. Right now, though, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Lauren Scheuer to Talking Animals. Good morning, Lauren.
Hi, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. So, I think a valuable place to start, especially for people who haven't had a chance yet to read the book, is why chickens?
Why chickens? My yard was getting a little bit boring. My daughter had grown up. We used to have so much fun in the backyard, but my daughter was turning into a teenager, and she moved back inside to her laptop.
Mm.
And, my dog was out there with me gardening, but still, I was still getting a little lonely, and I was looking around thinking there's got to be a way to liven up this yard. A friend of mine down the road had chickens, and she still has them, and she always has something going on out in the yard. The chickens would wander around in the garden, and they just seem to add color and life, so I thought I'd give it a try.
And prior to that, because it sounds sort of circumstantial with, the daughter disappearing into online activities, et cetera, but had you previously kind of entertained the notion of raising chickens, or was it sort of just like that was that moment where, hey, there's a bunch of things that, aren't as cool or exciting as they maybe could be or used to be, maybe I'll raise chickens?
Well, I actually love to build things, too. I've got a fine collection of power tools, and I had been building forts and things with my daughter also, and zip lines and anything else we could think of. And I thought, chicken coops are kind of cute, and I could do that.
Well, in fact, I was going to ask you how glib it might be to suggest that this was driven at least partly by your as we just heard, your professed love of power tools and a good collection of them. So was it at least partly that and again, passion for projects where you can put those many power tools to good use?
Yeah, I don't know which came first, the chicken or the coop in my case, because I started sketching coops long before I started looking at chickens and, what kinds of chickens I might get. But it all started coming together one winter, and my friend suggested that springtime would be the perfect time to get chicks. If we got them in February, they would be laying within 6 months, so that would be by the end of the summer, and we'd have fresh eggs. I thought, oh, this is all going to work. I'll just spend the winter drawing coops and learning about chickens. And, I designed myself a little coop that I thought I had the capability of at least making it stand up and hold together, and the chickens liked it.
Yeah. Well, Lauren, I suspect there are a lot of people intrigued by the notion of raising chickens, but maybe intimidated by what they know or what they think they know, and maybe more so by what they don't know about that world. I mean, what would you say the learning curve was like early on for you?
there's so much. This was 5 years ago, and there wasn't as much information, but it has snowballed lately, and there is so much information out there now. There's some great books on chicken health, on raising chickens, on building coops. On there are websites. I would mention backyardchickens.com as a place to begin, because there you'll find forums where people ask questions about chicken health. You'll find thousands of coops that people have designed and built and then posted pictures onto the site. There's a great deal of information out there, and it's not so hard. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Problems happen, but that's where the drama begins, and a little backyard drama never hurt anybody.
Sure. Well, and I know that you studied whatever you could get your hands on. And again, back then, like you say, there probably wasn't as plentiful sources of information as there are now. But you really steep yourself in that backyard chicken world. But still, in reading the book, you seem to have kind of a real instinct, like a sixth sense, about how to kind of look after them, that I don't know if it could have just come from books and websites and stuff. I mean, it just seems like, without you saying like, hey, look how great I am for doing this, but it just seemed like, when to check on the chickens when maybe wouldn't otherwise be time to do so, or one of the chickens maybe was in trouble or not feeling well or just off. I mean, it seemed like you just sort of had kind of an unerring, radar for...
I guess I do. I've always been a critter person. I have Marky the terrier, but I've done training with him, which I talk about in the book too.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had guinea pigs, and I've collected toads and frogs and snakes.
Yeah.
Probably all my life, and I love to know about other creatures, and I love surfing the net to find out the answers to things. And I did learn a lot about chickens. I think I like to know where they're coming from and where their heads are at. And with my special needs hen, Lucy, she's the one who gave me the opportunity to get into their heads.
Yeah.
She needed me, and she kind of just sucked me right into the flock. I became a more valuable member of the flock, I think, than your average chicken person who goes out and throws the leftover scraps out there and goes back inside. I sat down on a stool and hung out with the gals, and I think that's where you start to learn a little more about how they tick, and they're fascinating.
Yeah,
fascinating animals. They're smart, well, in their own way, and they've got language. They've got all sorts of different alarms for different kinds of danger. They have friendships. They have rivalries. I have an evil chicken as well, who I'm she's a sociopath, and I adore her just as much as the rest of them. But the more I spent with the girls, the more fascinating they become. And
sure. Well, let's let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Lauren Scheuer, author of Once Upon a Flock, My Life with My Soulful Chickens. If you'd like to ask Lauren a question, if you've been thinking about getting some backyard chickens yourself, or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Let's kind of meet the flock, any kind of conversation sort of has to begin and maybe end, too, with Lucy, who you alluded to. I mean, in a way, the book is kind of Lucy's book as much as it might be yours, it seems.
It is. It's Lucy's story. And,
yeah.
Like I said, I've had this flock for 5 years, and chickens come and go. Things happen, and you lose a bird, and you gain some birds. But Lucy, today, is still with me. And she still lives in, I don't know about pain, but discomfort. She has, she early on had a disease called Merrick's disease. And now I think she may even have had rickets because her toes are kind of twisted. But I kind of expected her to pass. I had this paralyzed chicken, and the vet didn't give us much hope. But Lucy kept on living. And I didn't know what to do except to bring her into the house and keep on feeding her, because what do you do? And
yeah.
It was Lucy who started a relationship with me and who taught me so much about the way a chicken thinks and the way a chicken gets through the day.
Yeah. No, she really seems like kind of a pretty remarkable creature. And yeah, I mean, just the way that she was sort of struck by the Marek's disease and yet kind of kept going. I think, again, you know, largely with your help and assistance. But then, you know, the story takes another twist. Maybe you could talk about her nesting instinct and
goodness.
Yeah.
She went broody, which is what happens when, you know, these chickens, people get chickens to lay eggs. The chickens have been bred as backyard livestock, you know, domesticated to lay eggs. And they lay right and left, hundreds of eggs a year, and get up out of the nest and walk away from them. That's how we've bred their mothering instinct out of them. But occasionally a chicken will want to be a mother, and Lucy went broody. She puffed up, she started muttering to herself, and she refused to leave the nest. And even when I kicked her out of the nest, she'd just stand next to the closed coop door and complain and argue. And finally I let her back in, and I thought, well, you know, Lucy wants to have a baby. She's been through hard times. Who am I to say no, you can't have a kid, you know?
Yeah,
and I thought,
yeah.
Oh, let's just start another adventure. I went and got some eggs from a friend who has a rooster, because you can get eggs without a rooster, but you can't get chicks without a rooster.
Right. Important part of the equation. Yeah.
Right. I got fertile eggs from a friend, and Lucy sat on them, and with my help, the two of us hatched an egg. Again, since Lucy needed me so much, I was there, and I got to be part of it more than some chicken people would get to be part of the broody experience, because most broody hens will hiss and peck at you if you ever come near them. They're furious broody creatures. But Lucy was nothing but kind the whole way through.
Yeah.
And accepted my help every step of the way, and allowed me to follow her around as she raised her chick too. So I watched her choosing which foods to feed her baby out in the yard. You know, she'd say, oh, try this. This is wood sorrel. This is really good, but don't eat that. That's got prickers on it. Or this is a really good bug, but watch out for the striped ones. The yellow and black striped ones are off limits. And I watched her telling her chick all of these things. Just every day was another wonderful learning experience for me.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. I mean, you had this great sort of very close-up vantage point to see, you know, all this unfold. And clearly, maybe just because Lucy's nature, but maybe also helping her with the Marek's disease. I mean, she clearly really, really trusted you and welcomed you in ways that, again, maybe you wouldn't necessarily find in other circumstances.
Yeah. And she still does. She has had friendships, more close friendships than my other hens have had.
Yeah.
In her lifetime, and I have to say, we just lost Pigeon, who was introduced late in the book.
Oh yeah.
She was a treasure and had a wonderful life with us. And she was Lucy's self-proclaimed best friend. She decided she was just going to be Lucy's little friend forever, and
get it done, whatever Lucy thought about it. Yeah,
right. Yeah. And Lucy grew to adore her too.
Yeah.
So now Lucy's she's not sad. She's a chicken. Again, if it's a sunny day, it's a good day.
And, yeah.
But I do see that she comes to me and she calls to me when I'm out in the yard, suggesting that maybe I come over and hang out with her.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a sweet thing, but I don't feel sorry for her at all. She continues to be respected by the flock, and that's the other, another just little element that blows me away. When I have youngsters, when I add a few young chickens to the flock, they pick at Lucy, but as they grow up, they see something in her. They all come to respect her.
So you mean they pick at her because she's in a kind of a weakened state just from the effects of the Marek's disease? Or,
right, because
yeah,
she's usually sitting down, and she's not very active.
I see.
And I think they see that she's a weak chicken, and
right.
In some ways. And it's a natural reaction for chickens to
attack the weaker.
In some cases.
Yeah.
You know, because in the wild, again, they
right.
a weak chicken would probably lure predators.
Sure.
And they'd all be in trouble, you know.
Right.
So, but as the young ones grow up and find out what it's, you know, all the challenges of living day to day, they all grow to respect Lucy. And
sure.
She retains her position in the flock, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, no, she projects, I'm sure, some kind of majestic presence that once those youngins get the hang of it, it's like, wow, we made a mistake by messing with this lady.
But, right.
So, Lauren, with Pigeon, unfortunately, losing Pigeon, and you mentioned adding. So what from your standpoint, what really constitutes a flock? I mean, I gather that it's from reading what you said in the book, at least that for you, at least it's three or more. Is that?
Yeah, I think it was Wikipedia or somewhere I read
okay.
that a flock is three or more chickens.
Okay.
So that works for me because if you only have two, you don't have those wild interactions, and they're just like a bunch of old ladies chatting and arguing and complaining and chasing each other and having a good time when you've got a flock. When you've just got two, they're just kind of looking at each other.
Yeah, yeah.
So I try to maintain, I'm down to three now, and in anticipation of the comings and goings of chickens, I have ordered four chicks, and they're arriving next week, and I just can't wait.
Well, so that maybe brings to mind a question that, let's talk a little bit about breeds because, you know, Lucy and, you know, I think at least two that have sort of passed through the backyard there are, is it Barred Plymouth Rocks? Is that how you pronounce
it? People call them Barred Rocks.
Yeah, okay.
But the full name is Barred Plymouth Rocks.
Right.
They were bred originally in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and I chose that breed at first because it's winter hardy up here in New England.
Sure.
Probably not the best breed for Florida, but
right.
But there are if you've got a way to keep your chickens cool, then a barred Plymouth Rock could handle things down there pretty well, I guess.
What off the top of your head at least, what would be a particularly good breed, do you think, for Florida given the heat and humidity as opposed to where you are?
I understand that Rhode Island Reds, even though they're bred in New England, are able to handle heat, humidity,
okay.
cold, all. What you would look for is the less fluffy breeds.
Sure.
There's, I believe, Fiume. There's some interesting exotic breeds. There's some Egyptian breeds that you can look up that they can handle the southern climates better.
Yeah.
They're, Americana. People love these birds because they will also give you colored eggs.
Oh, wow.
Blue, green, sometimes pink. And I believe that they're good in all
climates.
All climates.
Yeah, cool.
Also, you might consider bantams, which are the smaller version of chicken breeds. They lay little tiny eggs, and they're awfully cute, and they do much better in warmer weather.
Oh, good. All right, so Lauren, we've had some callers and emailers. Let's work at least one of our callers into the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Lauren Scheuer.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Lauren. I had a breed that has lived with me for a while. It just roams free. It's a pheasant, a Chinese golden pheasant. Do you have an email address?
I can check with you
about a mate. It's a male Chinese golden pheasant. I'm trying to find a mate for it. Hate to get off topic here.
I know people raise quail and pheasant also. There are all sorts of different critters that'll lay eggs for you too, turkeys. But yes, you can find me at laurenscheuer.com. That's my website.
Okay, that's good. I'll give you an email about this.
Okay.
Question. All right. Thanks for your call. Of course, there also might be chickenmatch.com, but I can't attest to that for sure. So thanks for your call. So Lauren, one of the things that you sort of touched on and that I found really, so much as I just thought was really fascinating, but the sort of emotional complexity of the chickens. I was really struck by that. I mean, we talk periodically on this show about the emotional complexity of elephants and sometimes the emotional complexity of orcas and, you know, other, you know, big, you know, animals with big brains. But chickens, frankly, don't usually come up in that sort of conversation. But maybe they should after reading your book.
Well, you know, their brains are about the size of a bottle cap.
You know,
and you think, okay, I really expected them to sort of just walk around and eat bugs and, you know, bump into each other and turn around and walk the other way.
Yeah.
I never expected any of this, but you know, pet lovers will tell you how amazing their goldfish is too. And if you spend the time with your creature and look at what they're saying and doing, you realize they're animals. So no, they're not smart as far as being able to do math or do complex reasoning, but
sure.
But the intelligence these chickens have, they started as jungle fowl in Indonesia, and the jungle fowl in Indonesia still exists there and live perfectly happily on their own, and they got to be smart to live. You know,
yeah.
Any animal in the world has to be smart to live, and the hens have they have a whole slew of language I don't even understand, but the ones that I do hear very clearly are when there's a hawk in the sky, they have one certain warning call, which is different from there's a fox in the woods, and they also understand. They understand when one of them is sick. They understand when one of them is dying, and they actually hold vigil.
Right. Well, that's a perfect example of what I was really struck by is that, you know, it's one thing for animals to sort of, you know, make friends or have a companionship thing, but there was a certain sort of protectiveness and a certain at least brushing up against grief, if not actually there. When, and again, as you said earlier, actually referenced a pigeon, I mean, it might be short-lived because, as you say, if it's a nice day, you know, it's a good day for a chicken, even if, you know, one of their buddies has unfortunately just passed away. But still, some of the behavior that they're capable of, I guess I didn't really realize that they would be.
Yeah, and they, you know, they have a pecking order, which doesn't always involve pecking, but they have a flock leader. And a whole ranking, and sometimes it's a pretty complex one where I'm the boss of you, but you can be the boss of that person over there, but I'm the boss of both of you. When they lose a flock member, like when we lost Pigeon just recently,
mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure it out. I don't know the answers. I don't know what's really happening, but excuse me. It seems that they're all pausing to look at to acknowledge that the flock is changing. Now our leader is gone.
Mm.
Now where will we be? Will we be rearranging the rank?
Yeah.
And in this case, because these are older gals that I have, the rank hasn't changed since Pigeon left.
Mm.
But sometimes it does, and when Pigeon entered our flock, she came in with a vengeance and said, I will be the boss here. And,
right.
And Lucy and Lil White just looked at her and said, all right, just don't peck us, okay?
Right.
You can be the boss.
We get
Fine.
Your message loud
Whatever.
And clear. Yeah. And how long does that process take, Lauren, have you found that if the pecking order is going to shift around, like over what period of time does that happen?
In my experience, just a day or two.
They make their
case.
Wow.
If anybody has a problem with it, they have discussions. Otherwise, they're all fine with it.
Interesting.
I have a Rhode Island Red named Daisy, who is the youngest one of my flock, and she's never really caught on to the chicken etiquette. So she gets pecked a lot by both Lucy and Lil White, just because when I put some food down for Lucy, and I bring extra stuff for Lucy because she's not foraging and scratching and pecking like the rest of them.
Sure.
But Daisy comes running over and sticks her head right into the bowl right next to Lucy, and Lucy pecks at her eye.
Right, so, yeah.
No one's ever getting hurt. Lucy has a warning growl before she attacks, too, but Daisy just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
She
Well, maybe a few more pecks. Hopefully she'll, get the hang of what Lucy's trying to communicate there.
But I think they aim for harmony. They're not out there.
Trying to stir up trouble. Yeah,
no,
on their own.
No, they're not
trying
to stir up trouble. And the best way to keep trouble from happening in your coop is to give the birds enough space.
Right.
And enough, if there is trouble happening, put out several feeding stations so that there's no fight over, you know, who's getting the food.
Right. It's almost what you would think about for cats, if you have multiple cats, like, hey, let's keep the
family,
territorial thing.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. And if they're enclosed all day and aren't able to, you know, if you're not in the situation where you can let them free range,
mm-hmm.
then give them some enrichment. I take an apple and put it on a skewer of wire and hang it from the side of the coop so they can peck at an apple or at a head of broccoli or a head of cabbage. There are things like that you can offer them that are, you know, interesting and fun to them. In the winter, I kind of go overboard and I hide. I get unsalted peanuts in the shells and kind of hide them around the
wow
and the run.
Serious enrichment here. This is, sounds great.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Happy chickens are a joy, and they're giving me eggs every day.
Yeah.
That's a gift.
For sure. Well, so Lauren, there's some more callers and emails we want to work into the conversation, but just before we leave sort of the topic of sort of the emotional complexity and some of the surprises there, you know, on the other hand, there are chickens who may be just plain old nuts. And, I guess obviously I'm sort of speaking about Lil White. Maybe you could talk a little bit about her and her temperament relative to the other, you know, the birds that, you know, you've known in your backyard.
Lil White is a buff Orpington. She's not white. We thought she was going to be a white bird, but she ended up being the buff Orpington. She's a golden, gorgeous, voluptuous, beautiful bird, and she's despicable. She's a sociopath. She mm-hmm. she hates me. She hates everyone in the flock. She has no friends. She needs no friends. When I let the girls free range, she walks right into the woods.
Wow.
She's ready to. She'll take on that fox. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And she's not aggressive toward any of us. She's just hateful, and she's passive aggressive. In my first coop, I had a single nest box for the girls to lay their eggs, because with a flock of three, all you need is one nest box. And Lil White would go in there and sit down to lay her egg. And when the other ladies would come in saying, "Are you done yet? I kind of need to lay an egg," she'd just sit there and stare. And so, I watched her do this over and over, and she wasn't broody. She didn't need to lay an egg either.
Wow. She was just being a,
no, she was just being a poop.
Yeah.
So the next coop I built, I built one with two nest boxes, one for Lil White and one for everybody else. But even now, when I sit down on my little stool out in the chicken run with the gals, they all come over and say hi, and Lucy sits on my knee, and Lil White quietly steps around behind me and finds that one hole in my shirt, or finds the spot where my shirt doesn't meet my pants, and goes at me with a vengeance.
Yeah. Wow.
And I can gently brush her away, and she'll lose interest after a while and go do something else. But she tries to kill me every single day. I don't understand it. I just don't get it.
She's
no
steady.
Answer.
She's very consistent. I guess that's one of the pluses we can say there. But but also she's managed to survive all these years, especially wandering off into the forest and stuff. So she's a tough customer on every level, I guess. But,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, or just lucky.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of that, though, Lorna, you know, I had a question about this, and one of our emailers, it looks like, might have a similar kind of question. What is the expected longevity of these birds? I mean, I'm sure there's a range, as there are with, you know, any animal, but what does that look like for these sorts of chickens?
5 to 8 years seems to be the general longevity of American chickens. And I'm saying American because I know I have a friend on Facebook who lives in Italy and has chickens, and he has two hens who are 21 and 23.
Wow.
Which I can only imagine how wise those birds are. But in the U.S., we've never bred them for longevity. We've never bred them as pets.
Yeah.
Now that we're all, people are thinking pet chickens, it's a possibility. Now it's kind of a disappointment that they only do live 5 to 8 years. I do know someone who has a 10-year-old chicken, so it varies. I lost, you can lose chickens earlier to whatever issues.
Sure.
You know.
I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. My guest is Lauren Scheuer, author of Once Upon a Flock, Life with My Soulful Chickens. Just in the last couple of minutes of our conversation, but if you'd like to join that, 813-239-9662, your email dj@wmnf.org. And also, Lauren is, we haven't touched on even, is a noted illustrator. And so the book is full of cool illustrations and photographs of these chickens we're talking about, and hopefully we'll get into talking about Marky a little bit before we run out of time. But also keeps a blog as well. It's scratchandpeck.blogspot.com. So let's work one of these. Hi, you've been waiting for a while. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Lauren Scheuer.
Hi, my name is Lauren. And
hi, Lauren.
My life here in Florida, I'm laughing because it's mirroring yours up there. I've had chickens now for 3 or 4 years. I have several different breeds. I love them. I'm like instead of the crazy cat lady, I'm the crazy chicken lady among my friends. But I know them. You know, I love having my flock. We have, 8 full-grown, 4 babies, and we now have brought in a baby turkey that's getting raised with my 4 chicks right now.
Oh, wonderful.
So they're their own little flock. I know, and I'm laughing because, like you're saying, I have that special needs chicken. She's... Actually, I kind of have 2 of them, but not because of a disease, but just, they're a little wacky. And so I make sure that I give them special attention and that they don't get ran off from the food, that they get to eat and everything. And then I have the one, her name is Cindy, and she is the queen. I mean, and she's more of the loner. And, I do gardening and composting and all this kind of stuff. And if she sees me grab my a rake or a pitchfork, Cindy's by my side. She knows that there are going to be bugs and worms. And so, they know they are smart for who they are, for what they are. And so I'm just wanted to let you know that I'm here doing the same thing.
You're not alone, Lauren.
Yeah, it's great. They're great. I have some of the Americanas that lay the greenish blue eggs. And
they do well in Florida?
They do. Mine are. I have a barred rock. I have one barred rock, and she does great. Black Australopes. I have 2 Rhode Island Reds, a 3rd one growing up. They are great. The Rhode Island Reds are great here. I just wanted to put in my 2 cents.
Awesome, Lauren. Well, so
you talk about gardening with your chickens, and that's got to be one of my favorite things to do in the world. And gardening was never fun for me. I don't like weeding. I don't like any of that, but... When I grab my rake, their eyes light up because all they have are these little tiny claws, and I have this huge claw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. I go at that garden, and the bugs come right out, and the girls are right there nearly getting their heads chopped off as I'm raking,
Exactly, yep.
It's just adorable, and they're gardening companions, too. You got to remember that one.
Yeah.
Great, Lauren. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
So this, Lauren, let's talk briefly before we're really nearing the end of our time. But, of course, chickens are sort of at the center of this, book's story. Obviously, there's a dog that figures prominently, your terrier, Marky. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how, with your guidance, Marky went from being maybe a little too interested in the chickens and their movements and comings and goings to like a real ally and protector of them.
I totally trust him now, and I totally didn't trust him at the beginning. I read when you get chicks here, I read an article on how to introduce them to your pets, how to introduce your cat and introduce them to your dog. So I held one of my little chicks up to Marky, and his lips quivered, and he started drooling, and he just couldn't understand why this wasn't going to be lunch. And And I thought to myself, oh boy, this isn't going to work. I'm going to always have to keep my dog separate. When I play with the chicks, he's got to be locked up. It's just, unfortunately, this is the way it's going to be. And then there was one moment out in the yard after the girls had grown up and they were still, you know, up for grabs as far as Marky was concerned. He got into their cage, into the little chicken pen I had in the yard, and I thought, this is it. They're dead. And they weren't dead. I climbed in right after him and screamed at the top of my lungs. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't catch him. There were feathers flying. It was awful. And he ran out between my legs and across the yard and laid down under a tree and just stared at me. And once I stopped shaking and once I realized the chickens were okay, I stood up and I realized, wait a minute, Marky's just, I'm just not thinking the way he's thinking. Yeah. I need to change the way I'm behaving here. And from that day forth, he became the flock leader in his little head.
Yeah.
I fed him some chicken food, and I started explaining to him what his job is. And with a lot of work, he grew to understand what I wanted, and he got a lot of praise for it. And he is now a very, very trustworthy member of the flock.
Well, and it's a great story, and just as we wrap up here, Lauren, so, because one of our emailers also asked how would the chicks get along if they were to get some chicks themselves with cats and dogs. So you know, obviously the Marky story is that it can work. What do you think about cats? Obviously, as far as I recall, you don't have cats, but how do you think that would work?
I don't have cats, but I know people who have cats who hang out right there with the flock. So
okay. It
certainly can work. It has to do with their personalities, with your relationship with your cat,
yeah,
and with, you know, the circumstances. But anything can work.
Yeah.
It also can go terribly wrong. So you need to feel confident in what you're doing and never let your guard down when
right.
you're training.
And really understand the personalities of the players at hand. Well, Lauren, this has been really interesting. And again, this has been Lauren Scheuer. Her book is Once Upon a Flock, Life with My Soulful Chickens. And again, really breezy, fun read, loaded with her illustrations and photographs. So you can really see, you know, Lucy and Hatsy, who we didn't really talk about, Little White Pigeon and others, and of course, Marky. And so her website is Lauren Sure, it's Lauren Scheuer.com, and also her blog is scratchandpeck.blogspot.com. So thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, Lauren, and I'm sorry we didn't get to as many calls and emails as I would have liked, but I got to as many as we could. So
thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Very
really
fun.
Enjoyed it. All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, in just a few minutes, we'll speak with Scott Daly, Executive Director of Pet Pal Animal Shelter in St. Petersburg, which is holding its 11th annual Puppy Love Fundraising Dinner on May 10th. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. You know, I was at the final 2 days of the Moon Tower Comedy and Oddity Festival in Austin, which wrapped up Saturday. A fantastic event, absolutely loaded with great, great acts of all stripes. And I don't just say that because my wife booked most of the talent on it. But anyways, one of the veterans that was there was Todd Berry. Let's hear a piece of his called Prairie Dogs from Todd Berry on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Been in D.C., huh? Washington, D.C.? Yeah. It's the nation's capital. I went there. I went to the zoo by myself because I wanted to see pandas. And I follow the signs to the pandas, and right before the exhibit of pandas, there's an exhibit of prairie dogs. I don't know if you've ever seen a prairie dog, but they are adorable. They are staggeringly cute. They're unbelievably cute. We're just jaw-dropping. And I saw the prairie dogs, then I saw the pandas. I was like, oh, that's cool, but I kind of want to see more prairie dogs. And at that point, I realized what it must be like to be in the audience of a show where I am the opening act.
All right. That was Todd Berry with a piece called Prairie Dogs, taken from his album From Heaven. All right, Scott Daly is the Executive Director of Pet Pal Animal Shelter. Let's welcome him now to Talking Animals. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. So let's first, before we get into the big event coming up, let's give us maybe the nickel tour, if you would, of Pet Pal Animal Shelter. Where is it? What is its mission? When did it start? And what are its services?
We're actually downtown St. Petersburg, and we started in 2005. The shelter opened, and we're a no-kill facility in downtown St. Pete.
And how many animals are there at the moment, for example?
I have around 65 to 70 animals at this time.
Okay.
And we also do foster care, so we also have animals outside of the shelter.
Right, right. And so there's a lot of fosters placing these animals and, services that that obviously take money. And so how is the operation funded for the most part?
We're funded by the public. It's a nonprofit, so anything that's donated to the shelter is brought in, and we also have a thrift store, so if you make donations that way, we can sell it and make money for the animals that way.
Mm-hmm.
We also provide affordable vet care in St. Petersburg also. We have a vet clinic, and we have animals that are patients that come in to see our veterinarians, and that raises money for the shelter also.
Great, and then I suppose that the Puppy Love event coming up is a fairly critical source of Pet Pal Animal Shelter's kind of operating budget.
Very much so. It's our largest fundraiser of the year.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? It's coming up on May 10th, but maybe you could kind of...
It's actually May 11th.
May 11th. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Couldn't read my own chicken scratch right in there, right? So go ahead.
It's on May 11th. It starts at 6 p.m. And it's a silent live auction that we do. It's downtown at the Hilton. And it's a great time. A lot of people come in, and you have a sit-down dinner, and you get to bid on items, and all that proceeds goes towards the shelter and our medical fund.
Right, and I think there's music of different kind. I think sort of before the dinner and then during the dinner, there's two different...
We have live music during the dinner, and then we also have a DJ playing throughout the evening.
And it sounds like quite a to-do, and it's at the Hilton Bayfront, right, in St.
Correct,
Pete?
Correct, downtown St. Pete, yeah.
So how would people either find out more about Pet Pal Animal Shelter and or specifically maybe get tickets to the Puppy Love evening?
You can go to our website at petpalanimalshelter.com, and you can also email me at scott@petpalanimalshelter.com.
And also, Scott, if just easier for some people, could they call? I think I have 727-328-7738. Is that another?
That's our phone number, yes.
Yeah,
you can
okay.
Call and, we can sell tickets that way. You can also do it online, too, at our website. It takes you right to our donation page.
Oh, great. You can just get the tickets directly.
Correct.
Excellent. Well, good. This sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And now, will there be animals at the Puppy Love shebang?
Yes, we do have puppies there, yes. And we have probably 10 to 12 puppies at the event.
That people could adopt if they were sort of inclined at that moment?
Absolutely.
Or inspired? Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Everything here is up for adoption.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's great. Well, it sounds like a really great evening with a lot of great elements. And again, anytime you can bump into a puppy or a cat or a dog, whatever, and fall in love and maybe make an adoption right there, that's a great night all the way around. So, well, great, Scott. Well, thanks so much for joining us and filling us in on Pet Pal Animal Shelter. And again, that's May 11th, Saturday after this coming, at the Hilton Bayfront in St. Pete. And again, petpalanimalshelter.com or 727-328-7738. And they're also on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
All right, Scott.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Have a great day.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will win a copy of Lauren Scheuer's new book, Once Upon a Flock, Life with My Soulful Chickens. We'll do that just in a few moments here on Talk Animals. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. So perhaps the biggest news, at least locally, is sort of this morning, right now. The Hillsborough Board of County Commissioners will vote on whether or not to accept the Be the Way Home plan designed by Hillsborough County Animal Services Director Ian Hallett, which in addition to other euthanasia-reducing programs, calls for saving 2,000 stray cats who will be sterilized and returned to their neighborhoods rather than being euthanized. So see how this plays out. Hopefully we'll be able to fill you in on all kinds of information about that meeting and the results on next week's edition of Talking Animals. A couple other things that came up while we were out of town and not here doing the show live last week. One is the Senate unanimously passed a bill, SB 650, that prohibits selling or giving away artificially colored bunnies, chicks, and ducklings. The ban would exempt farms that use dyes on animals for protective health purposes. The House has a similar provision in an animal cruelty bill passed this month. The bills are in response to the legislature and Governor Rick Scott last year rescinding a 45-year-old animal dyeing ban because groomers told lawmakers they wanted to dye their show dogs. The ban had been put into place to prevent people from buying the colored animals during Easter. The animals often would be released afterward and die. Also, this happened in the last week or so. Wonder Gardens, one of the last old Florida-style roadside animal attractions in the state, closed its doors for Good Sunday. Lester Piper started the park in 1936 with panther cubs, alligators, and snakes, but the current owner, grandson David Piper, was diagnosed with an inoperable tumor, decided to close the park and sell the land and animals, and I guess a record number of people showed up. My question, among others, is where did those animals go? But no answers on that just yet. And also, a note here about and from our good friend Glenn Hatcher, the host of the Thursday morning show here on WMNF, and he's also involved with animal dog services and training and all kinds of things, especially affiliated with the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. So one of the things is at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, they have several dogs that have been in the shelter for more than 30 days. So he decided, Glenn did, to have an afternoon shelter dog play group for potential adopters to watch the dogs at play. So they're calling it Pick Your Pooch from playgroups, and it'll happen today, Wednesday, from 5:15 to 6:15 at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, 3607 North Armenia in Tampa. And Glenn holds playgroups of various kinds at the Humane Society, which really, of course, makes these dogs more socialized and more adoptable, and just so important. We're going to chat with Glenn a little bit more about that on next week's show. And coming up this Saturday, May 4th, is a huge rescue pet adoption weekend. Cat Crusaders is teaming up with Pet Pal, Guardian Angel, and Florida Cocker Spaniel Rescues for PetSmart Charities National Pet Adoption Weekend. Come in and check out adoptable kittens, cats, puppies, and dogs at special adoption rates. Take advantage of giveaways, etc. Each adoption comes with free pet food and coupons. That's all taking place at PetSmart, 6248 Commerce Palms Drive in Tampa, 813-558-8160. I think that'll do it for today's edition. Get into more stuff next week for sure. And so I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win. Then there'll be a prize, a copy of Lauren Scheuer's new book, Once Upon a Flock, Life with My Soulful Chickens. To the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal song to 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, if we have someone calling a guest, we'll take them off the air. Who knows? But I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. And we are sort of now near the end of today's edition. We'll be back next Wednesday, May 8th. I hope you'll join us then. Also, hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information and archives, podcasts, and past Talking Animals programs. We have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. That's all at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals Broadcast Outreach Consultant and Jill of All Trades is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to others. Be kind to animals. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with an animal song selected with Lauren Scheuer's book in mind. This is Garrett Watkins with Turn That Chicken Down on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.
Turn it down.